Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and thanks for being with us this weekend. I hope that you're doing something healthy on your own behalf, and you can start by spending an hour or so with us here on Intelligent Medicine. We've got lots of stuff to share with you. 888-302-3684 is our number, and we invite you to call us with questions. We're going to take a look at several issues this hour. We're going to look at the proposition, is endurance training actually bad for you? Can you overdo it? Are all those marathoners and triathletes actually doing themselves in? 888-302-3684, and we'll be taking your phone calls momentarily. But before we do that, this week our featured article in our newsletter, by the way, you can go to drhoffman.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's great, even if I have to say so myself. Very informative. And we don't put you on a mailing list and incessantly bombard you with advertisements. So we just want to give you good information to help you make choices. This week's article is about olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. I've been using olive leaf extract for a long time with patients. And we did a little deep dive on olive leaf. And it turns out that the Bible refers to the olive tree as the tree of life. Olives yield healthy monounsaturated fats, but that's really not the business end of olive oil and olive leaf benefits, because we thought it was the monounsaturated fat. So they made canola oil rich in monounsaturated fat. It's a hell of a lot cheaper than olive oil, but it's nowhere near as beneficial because it's not so much about the monounsaturated fats. It's about those beneficial phytochemicals, polyphenols, that are potent antioxidants and have many helpful properties. The ancient Egyptians regarded the olive leaf as a symbol of heavenly power, and they used it to mummify their kings. That ought to have been a clue to its antibacterial effects and antifungal effects. In the 1800s, many treatises were written on how decoctions made with olive leaves were helpful for what are called recurrent fevers, also known as malaria. In the 1900s, scientists isolated a bitter compound called oleoropein from olive leaf. And in 1962, an Italian researcher recorded that oleoropein had the ability to lower blood pressure in animals. So, actually, a major pharmaceutical company, Upjohn, was going to come up with a new patented drug based on a chemical that could be extracted from olive leaves. The chemical was linoleic acid, or calcium D linolate. And a study was performed on calcium linolate and published by the Upjohn Pharmaceutical Company in 1970 and concluded that it was safe and non-toxic. And it was going to be a patentable, profitable antibiotic. But because it was a natural substance, you can't really patent natural substances. So they couldn't improve on Mother Nature, and they kind of left that research on the shelf. And it got resurrected in the 1990s when manufacturers began to sell olive leaf extract for infections. And that's when I started using it for conditions like acne, very helpful for teenage acne, for cystitis, bladder infections, for candida, yeast infections. Also for chronic infections like chronic sinusitis, even taking it for a cold can curtail the duration of a cold or bronchitis. So definitely has infection-fighting capabilities. But in addition, lately they've shown that it has heart-protective effects. And we know that the Mediterranean diet is very heart healthy. Well, one of the major constituents is olive oil. And it turns out when they do an analysis, it's the olive oil that's responsible for many of the benefits. It's got to be extra virgin olive oil that has a fruity aroma and a greenish tint, because that's where you get the beneficial polyphenols. That's a signature for oleuropein and hydroxytyrosol, the compounds that help circulation, lower blood pressure. In a recent study from the University of Auckland in New Zealand, 46 middle-aged overweight men were supplemented with olive leaf extract or placebo for 12 weeks. Compared with placebo takers, the olive leaf supplemented men showed a 15% improvement in insulin sensitivity. And it is a beneficial for the countless tens of millions of people who are on that borderline between normalcy and diabetes, so-called metabolic syndrome or prediabetes. Also, studies have shown that olive leaf may reduce vascular inflammation and lower blood pressure. It may help to reduce platelet aggregation. Makes your platelets less sticky, less likely to result in a heart attack or stroke. It has anti-inflammatory effects. It has vasodilatory effects. That means it expands blood vessels, and it's a potent antioxidant. So that may lead to another application. Olive compounds may possess neuroprotective properties because of their anti-inflammatory antioxidant effects, potentially slowing or reversing the deposits of amyloid plaque, which characterize Alzheimer's disease. So for heart protection, for brain protection, consider adding olive leaf extract to EPA, DHA, magnesium, resveratrol, curcumin, vitamin D, kaolic aged garlic extract, vitamin K2, EGCG. These are among the things that can be used to help prevent cardiovascular disease. And you can learn more about olive leaf extract. Go to drhoffman.com, because once we publish the articles in our newsletter, we put them up on our homepage at drhoffman.com. So let's take a call now from Rick in Pleasant View, Utah. How you doing, Rick?
I'm good. How are you, doctor?
Very well, thanks.
Okay, I'm 69. I have a typical L4, L5 bulging disc and spinal stenosis as diagnosed with an MRI x-rays. Went to a neurosurgeon. He recommended a laminectomy infusion. Everybody I talk to says that's not a high failure rates on those things. And I don't know, maybe it is the way to go, but I'm also considering the stem cell injections that you talked about a little earlier, and I was wondering what your thoughts on that was.
Has someone actually offered to inject stem cells into your spine to help this?
Yes.
Really? Okay. And what is this from, like, under a research protocol at a reputable university hospital, medical center, or, you know,
sports wellness clinic kind of thing down in Salt Lake City. There's two doctors that do it down there, and I went to one.
Yeah,
does that sound reasonable?
It may be reasonable. I mean, I would be concerned because it's the spine. I mean, it's one thing, you know, if it's the knee or the hip, there's a chance that with the knee or the hip that there could be some regeneration. You know, in hour one, we talked about stroke recovery as, quote, stunning results with patients who were given stem cells, but directly injected into the brain. They drilled holes in these patients' skulls, and they directly injected stem cells into parts of the brain surrounding the stroke area, and there was regeneration. So it's got to kind of go directly into the tissue that's affected. Now, what you have is, you know, it may be the result of degeneration, but it may also be the result of some kind of injury or extrusion of the disc, where the disc has to be shaved off surgically to achieve relief of your pain. And that's what the surgery would accomplish.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that just by putting the stem cells in, it would resolve and fix it all up. I guess if it's done safely and responsibly by orthopedists, you know, at a clinic where they do this a lot and they're experienced, they can do it under proper visualization, get in the right place, there's no danger of injury or paralysis, it might be worth a try, but I'm kind of skeptical as to whether it's going to resolve your problem. Now, back surgery is mostly a bummer because, yeah, it'll relieve pain temporarily, but usually doesn't resolve the problem long term. And, you know, I would go through every possible physical therapy, acupuncture, you know, gentle chiropractic, you know, home stretching, all the kinds of things that, you know, could help this before, you know, going under the knife with surgery.
I've done all those. Yeah, I've done
been there, done that. Been there, done that.
I have a table that I hang upside down to try to decompress on as well.
You know, so, the surgery, you know, this, you may be a candidate for surgery. Because ultimately, surgery, you know, for the vast majority of conditions, surgery, medication, overdone, it should be a last resort. But there's a place for surgery when there's intractable pain or disability, weakness, you know, inability to have proper balance and sensation in the legs. And therefore, you may ultimately have to go under that. I'm not sure that stem cells are the answer. It hasn't really been clearly established whether stem cells are an alternative to back surgery. Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question is it going to be laminectomy or fusion?
I didn't say you got a next question, but I'll answer it anyway.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I'm not.
That's okay. I'm just kidding. I would leave it. I would leave it to the surgeon. I mean, obviously, laminectomy is a less, a less invasive. Type of procedure than fusion. The problem with fusion so often is that, you know, you take a part of the back and you fuse it, and then it creates upstream or downstream problems. So you got to really consider whether it's totally necessary to have a fusion. I would probably suggest that you go for the more conservative procedure, which is laminectomy. Just have that local area excised. Okay? Thanks for your call. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. Call us with your questions. We got more to talk about. We'll talk about endurance athletes. Are they putting themselves at risk? This is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And while we're talking about blood pressure, you know, olive leaf extract will lower blood pressure, but far too many people require meds for blood pressure management. I think the statistic is that half of people over the age of 55 are on blood pressure meds. I'm here to tell you about the Zona Plus. And it's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal for blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. And it's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology, and it's used just once a day for only 12 minutes. The research is there. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks of use. You can try it risk-free. Zona Health offers a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Try the Zona Plus for 3 months and see if it works for you. If it doesn't, return it for a full refund. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. All right, now to the question, is endurance training bad for you? You know, there's so many accounts of athletes dropping dead after major exertion. There's just another one, Dutch professional cyclist Gijs Verdijk, died in a hospital a week after suffering a double heart attack during a race. And so is high-intensity exercise bad for you? This is a question relevant to me and to many of you out there who are trying to push the envelope on performance. And there's a new study that contradicts previous research. You see, in 2012, Belgian scientists published a study that concluded that repeated bouts of intensive endurance exercise at the elite level, hey, most of us aren't elite, so don't worry, but at the elite level, it may result in enlargement of the right ventricle. The condition is referred to as ARVC, exercise-induced arrhythmogenic right ventricular cardiomyopathy. That's a mouthful, but it results in cardiac arrhythmias. So that's a 2012 study. Well, another research group, this one from the University of Saarland, shows that they were wrong. They looked at 33 elite master athletes, average age 47, and what they found was, yes, indeed, their hearts were enlarged, but that's strong. Their hearts were larger and stronger. But they were able to confirm that there was no evidence of lasting damage or functional impairment of either the right or left ventricle in the athletes who had been doing long-term intensive elite-level endurance exercise. So a reassuring study for those of us who are trying to push the envelope on athletic performance, particularly as we get older. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Good health isn't always by chance, but with planning and commitment, the payoff is priceless. Essential Formulas is proud to offer unparalleled, scientifically proven probiotic formulations that support the body's ability to maintain health from a microbial and cellular level. Our award-winning Dr. O'Hara's probiotics supports your own exclusive probiotic fingerprint, which promotes digestive and whole health. Dr. O'Hara further developed a unique line of skincare products, natural and chemical-free, all with his signature probiotic support. And our RegActive products contain ME3, the only probiotic scientifically proven to actually produce the master antioxidant glutathione within your body to help maintain cellular health during daily exposure to free radicals, common environmental toxins, and the effects of aging. Look for Dr. O'Hara's line of probiotic products and RegActive at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production, from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals' high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and we're taking phone calls, 888-302-3684. If you can't get through to us today, you can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, and no, we won't send you an answer via email, but we will use your question as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast. So if you listen to those podcasts, you'll eventually hear your question answered in detail. So let's go to Frank in Brooklyn, New York. How you doing, Frank?
How are you doing? How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm calling because a friend of mine said he heard your show last week about breakthrough with people with strokes.
Yeah.
And my wife had a stroke about 6 years ago, and hemorrhaging, one of the worst.
Right, it is. Yeah, the worst kind. Mm-hmm.
What if anything, could you advise me of what's going on so maybe I get him some help?
Okay, yeah. So hemorrhagic strokes, I mean, 85% of strokes are what are called thrombotic strokes, where there's blockage and temporary loss of circulation. And hemorrhagic stroke is actually kind of the opposite, because it's not caused by a blood clot. It's caused by leakage of blood, burst blood vessel into the brain tissue, and that's just as damaging, can be very devastating. 6 years down the line, it's hard to know what can be done to resurrect neurological function, because it's pretty well established. But if you weren't listening to Hour 2, because you're listening from New York and you're probably listening on WR, in Hour 1 I discussed the results of a very exciting study that came out of Stanford, where they used stem cells to regenerate brain function. But they didn't use stem cells in the way that some stem cell clinics are now offering stem cells, where they draw a little bit of adipose tissue from your belly, or maybe they'll go into the bone marrow, pull out some cells, and then they shoot it up into your vein. That's a little bit kind of willy-nilly application of stem cells. The way that these scientists at Stanford did it is they drilled holes in patients' skulls and injected stem cells directly into the area where a stroke had occurred, and some regeneration occurred even more than 6 months after the stroke. Usually it's thought there's kind of a critical period where you could have some recovery, but after 6 months you pretty much have a fixed situation. The other thing that can be helpful after stroke, although I'm not sure it's going to be helpful 6 years later, is hyperbaric oxygen treatment. Hyperbaric oxygen treatment has been shown to be helpful in stroke rehabilitation, but it's best used, I think, in that critical period right after a stroke, when there's, you know, some tissue that's in that twilight zone between completely dead and completely well-functioning, sort of an intermediate zone of poor functioning, where tissue function, neuron function has been compromised but not completely eradicated. So right now, I'm not sure that this new study at Stanford will be made widely available at medical centers across the country, but it may, you know, within a year or two, they may fast track it so that things can be done. You know, mostly when we talk about stroke rehabilitation, we talk about the nutrients that help to promote circulation. Then in the case of a thrombotic stroke, can thin the blood. In this case, we don't want to thin the blood because it's a hemorrhagic stroke. We don't want to use blood thinners. Or, you know, cognitive enhancing things, things like resveratrol and pycnogenol, things that can help energize the brain, like niacin, nicotinamide riboside. In terms of, you know, actual destruction of brain tissue, there's probably nothing in the nutritional armamentarium that can take dead cells and make them resurrect Lazarus-like into normal function. So I'm sorry to disappoint you on that account. All right, let's talk to Stella. Hey, Stella, how you doing? Stella's in Stamford, Connecticut. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Great show.
Thank you.
I have a question about olive leaf extract. Now, I've known the benefits of it for years, but my question to you, and I do get mixed answers. One of the things that you did say, and I have heard that it does tend to lower your blood pressure. Now, I normally have blood pressure on the lower side. It's just hereditary, actually.
Right.
It's always been on the lower side, and I'm 62. So my question is, would the olive leaf lower it even more, which for me would not be a good thing?
The answer to that is that it probably wouldn't lower it very much if you have normal blood pressure. Taking a blood pressure medication, a diuretic or something like that, they're much more powerful than olive leaf extract, and they might dangerously lower your blood pressure. It's actually well known that in certain elderly patients who were overzealously treated with high blood pressure medication, they can actually have TIAs or strokes because their blood pressure is lowered too much. It's as if, you know, if you think of blood flow to the brain like a column of water, when there's not enough pressure, you know, in a garden hose and you're trying to water something uphill, you know, the water's not going to get to the plants. Well, in this case, the blood doesn't get to the brain if the blood pressure is too aggressively lowered. But these are medications. And olive leaf extract, I would say, has more of a homeostatic effect on blood pressure. In other words, if it's high, it may help to lower it. And if it's normal, it probably won't have much of an effect. So, you know, I suppose you're taking it not just for the blood pressure lowering effects, but for the infection fighting effects or the, you know, protective effects, the anti-atherogenic effects, you know, just the way that people eat a Mediterranean diet for prevention. And that's a good way to go if you use lots of olive oil. Or you can take a specific extract of olive leaf, which is something that we've developed for the Hoffman Center. It's called olive leaf extract, not surprisingly. And it's a standardized form of oleoropein, which is kind of the business end, the active ingredient that is offered in capsules. And you generally take, a couple of capsules a day for prevention. If you have an infection, you may take 4 or 6 or 8 capsules a day to alleviate the infection. Okay.
Right. Okay. All right, Dr. Hoffman, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for calling. All right. So a big buzz these days about krill oil versus fish oil, huge controversy. The makers of krill oil claim that krill oil is superior to fish oil because it contains within it something called astaxanthin, but also that the EPA and DHA in krill oil is somehow better than the EPA, DHA in fish oil. Now, krill oil often positions itself as an easier way to hit your requisite dosage of EPA, DHA, because the capsules are smaller. But even though they have less EPA and DHA, you could take fewer capsules because it's, quote, more bioavailable. So I did a little research on this, and I have not been a big fan of krill oil. I've been resistant to including it in our dispensary because I don't think the research passes muster. And we've done a few podcasts with experts on this subject, including Dr. Thomas Williams. You can go back and dig those up. But as of this writing, he says, only short-term and very limited comparisons are available to ascertain the relative bioavailability of krill oil versus fish oil. The central premise is that the EPA and DHA from krill oil is in phospholipid form, which is the form that is actually what the body uses in cell membranes. However, that may be a spurious claim because all fat must be digested before uptake in the body. And phospholipids are like a form of fat. And phospholipase, which is a digestive enzyme, breaks the bonds in the phospholipids so that they're actually broken down before they're absorbed into the body. So how can they be more bioavailable? They get broken down just as lipase breaks the bonds in triglycerides, in the triglyceride form of fish oil that you get in a health food store or via nutritional pharmacy. And there are also ethyl ester fish oils, but in digestion, a carboxyl ester lipase breaks those down. So they all get broken down, and then they get reassembled, and then they get sent to the brain, they get sent to the blood vessels, they get sent to all the various parts of the body where fish oils make a difference. But they get broken down and digested. So there are some studies that compare fish oil toe-to-toe with krill oil, but many of them are sponsored by the makers of krill oil. And they stack the deck to use inferior forms of EPA, DHA from fish oil versus the krill oil. So, you know, the studies, I have to say, there are few of them. There are very few of them. I think there's about 4 on which this whole premise is based. And many of the studies are flawed. And if you do statistical analysis on the studies, and this we're getting into some deep weeds here with, you know, scientific jargon. But if you look at the studies really aren't that great that demonstrate that krill oil is somehow more, quote, bioavailable than fish oil. You could argue that the astaxanthin in the krill oil is an advantage. But again, there's not that much research on human benefits of astaxanthin. There's a lot more research on, for example, vitamin E, tocotrienols. The benefits of those are very well established. Lycopene, the mixed carotenoids, those are very well researched. But astaxanthin, you know, it is a carotenoid. Is it that beneficial? Is it a super potent antioxidant? And besides, the amount of astaxanthin in a krill oil pill is very, very small. And astaxanthin supplements sometimes come clock in at 6 or 8 milligrams. You might get about a half to 1 milligram in a krill oil capsule. So you'd have to take a lot of krill oil to get, quote, significant doses of astaxanthin into your system, if indeed it's beneficial. So bottom line, I got to say that the conclusion that I've reached and other researchers have reached, people who I respect, is that the claims for krill oil are kind of exaggerated. And is it really beneficial? One expert that I'm consulting here, there's little evidence to support the bioavailability claims related to krill oil. Many of the health benefits attributed to krill oil may arise from its high astaxanthin content. What about cost effectiveness? Krill oil may not currently offer a cost-effective substitute for highly concentrated omega-3 products. And if we want to answer these questions, we need more human intervention studies to investigate the effects of krill oil, which are as yet not proven. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You can call us, 888-302-3684. We got lots more to talk about during this hour of Intelligent Medicine.
At Wakanaga of America, we have dedicated the past 44 years proudly producing Kyolic, the world's most scientifically researched, best-selling, and odorless aged garlic extract. We begin with 100% organically grown garlic from our farms in California for maximum purity. We age our garlic to perfection in a unique 20-month extraction process to eliminate odor and create beneficial compounds found only in Kyolic. Aged garlic extract has been researched in more than 750 published scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA. Studies have focused on cholesterol, high blood pressure, immune stimulation, and all major cardiovascular risk factors. This is the Kyolic difference. So when you're looking for a supplement for great cardiovascular support, reach for the number one best-selling and odorless aged garlic extract, Kyolic. Please visit our website at kyolic.com. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at fine health food stores everywhere.
As consumers in the 21st century, we are truly fortunate to have an abundance of choices in our daily lives. But when it comes to digestive health, there should only be one choice. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, easily recognizable in the bright green box on your retailer's shelf. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics stands out among all others. Never freeze-dried, but always live and viable due to a unique 3-year fermentation process, award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics provides the restorative balance needed to support your own exclusive probiotic fingerprint. And that is very important, as no two of us are alike. With over 30 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics takes digestive and wellness support to a whole new level. So look for the bright green box on your retailer shelf today. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Let's talk now to Eddie in Brooklyn. How you doing, Eddie?
Hello, doctor.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, doctor. Listen, I think one of your early callers, you called about his back.
Yeah.
I suffered with many of the same symptoms as he had, herniated disc, degeneration, spinal stenosis. And I was an athlete much like you. I ran my whole life in lifted weights.
Yeah.
And after going to multiple physical therapists and chiropractors. I went to an acupuncturist. Well, that didn't help me either. But in passing, she mentioned a video called Foundation Training.
Okay.
And it's run by a physical therapist called Dr. Mark Goodman. And I'm not pushing him. But after doing his exercise for a week, and when I looked at the exercise, I go like, there's no way this is going to help me.
Yeah.
After being in pain for almost 2 years, that helped me significantly so that now I'm actually running back to like doing my 5Ks and so forth again.
And you were pre-op for back surgery at that point? They were telling you that was the only way out?
I went to Mount Sinai, and I had a great doctor that kind of talked me out of it. He said, listen, do everything you can except get surgery.
That's
and
a good doctor. That's
my
a good doctor.
Did not improve after a year. I went back to him, and again, he again kind of said, listen, I can do surgery. So he showed me what he could do, and just looked like a bunch of 2x4s and bolts. And he said, it may help for a year or two, but eventually you're going to have problems again. So he said, listen, try to put it off and do everything you can. And, shortly after, I ran into the acupuncturist.
For our listeners, what was that therapy that you advocate?
It's called Foundation Training by Dr. Goodman, and it's on YouTube. And I only did the 4 minutes. There's one that says like it's only for 4 minutes.
Great.
And it's very easy stretches. I would think when I looked at them, I said, there's no way this is going to help. But
well,
thanks
for sharing that, because that's a really encouraging message that I think a lot of people need to hear, is that so many people want a quick fix, and many doctors are less scrupulous than the honest doctor that you saw who said, look, I'm a neurosurgeon. This is what I do for a living, or an orthopedic surgeon. I can do your back, but I'm going to tell you that the results may not be entirely satisfactory, and you're better off trying natural means of helping it. And the natural means, you know, it's going to take a little daily application. It's not as easy as just putting yourself in a surgical suite, but you can actually work your way out of back problems. I mean, I've had back problems, probably not as serious as what you described, but I find that core exercises and stretching, physical training, really make a difference if you take the time to do them, you know, year in, year out. It's really going to help you avoid problems down the line, and surgery, which is not entirely satisfactory. Another thing that I've mentioned is Dr. Maroon of University of Pittsburgh has been on our show and has talked about the benefits of fish oil in a study that he did. He took a bunch of patients who were scheduled for back surgery, was going to be inevitable, and gave them a choice of either fish oil or, well, not a choice. There was a double-blind placebo study that gave them fish oil or placebo for 6 months. And the ones taking fish oil, half of them didn't need the back surgery. So fish oil, wonderful anti-inflammatory, and has to be taken at high doses, maybe 6 or 8 a day, but worth trying for chronic back pain, you know, among other things that are in our natural armamentarium. All right, I will share this as a final note today. You know, there's a big push to do low-salt labeling, to ban salt from foods. Headline, low-salt diets may not be beneficial for all, studies suggest. This is a big study, 130,000 people from 49 countries. And what they found is that for people with high blood pressure who consume a lot of salt, it makes sense to reduce salt consumption. But for people without hypertension, they don't need to reduce their salt consumption. In fact, reducing salt consumption could actually be harmful. The researchers say, our data highlights the importance of reducing high salt intake in people with hypertension. It does not support reducing salt intake to low levels. Our findings are important because they show that lowering sodium is best targeted at those with hypertension who also consume high sodium diets. It turns out that only about 10% of the population in this global study had both high blood pressure and high sodium. Those are the ones who needed to reduce their sodium. The harm associated with high sodium consumption appears to be confined only to those with hypertension. The lead researcher on the study says that what is now generally recommended as a healthy daily ceiling for sodium consumption appears to be set too low, regardless of a person's blood pressure level. And low sodium intake may have other harmful effects, including adverse elevations of certain hormones, which may outweigh any benefits. So we're on a low-salt jihad unnecessarily. You know, look, we tackled, okay, trans fats. We want to ban, you know, sodas. But let's not carry it away because these measures may be unnecessary. Thanks for joining us. And remember, this program is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. You can get lots more information by going to drhoffman.com, subscribe to the newsletter, listen to the podcasts. They're extraordinary value. They're free. Enjoy them. That's what intelligent medicine is all about. And have yourselves a great weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us.